It is time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy because there might be something you want to write down, some date, some place, some time, some web page, something you might want to remember later. Let's start off with announcements. The 2013 Earth First Round River Rendezvous is going to take place in North Carolina first week of July, the 1st through the 8th. It's the annual gathering of the Earth First Movement. Each summer, this week-long campout attracts several hundred Earth Firsters from around the world. The gathering is coordinated by a volunteer committee, which this year is Croatan Earth First. And they'll be hosting it in central North Carolina. And you can find out the exact location by going to the following webpage, 2013summerrendez.wordpress.com. The gathering includes workshops, campaign discussions, campfire music, and a rally with performers and speakers. These gatherings are particularly important for developing a cohesive activist network and planning actions on the local level, and that's because of all the informal networking that goes on. They'll be offering earth skills, plant mushroom identification, eco-spirituality workshops, as well as medic training, but you got to sign up for that ahead of time. Go to the webpage to figure out how to do that. They're going to need money, and if you got anything you want to ask them, email to cef@riseup.net, that's cef@riseup.net, or if you want to, croatanearthfirst@gmail.com, croatanearthfirst@gmail.com. And once again, that webpage for all the information, including the schedule, anything you need to know, and the location of the rendezvous, it's 2013summerrendez.wordpress.com. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. As we enter the summer solstice, America's last wild buffalo continue to be assaulted by the Montana Department of Livestock. There are, however, three mama buffalo and their calves, along with a bull, that have so far dodged every attempt by the Montana Department of Livestock has made against them. As of this writing, they remain on the buffalo-friendly property of the Galanis family on Horse Butte. However, other groups of buffalo have not been so lucky, and they have video on their webpage if you want to go check that out. The Buffalo Field Campaign's Free Buffalo Museum is open. We're located just outside Yellowstone National Park's west entrance in the town of West Yellowstone. The address, 128 Firehole Number 2. The museum provides visitors with an incredible buffalo journey through their storied history and amazing natural lives to their current plight and the efforts of people standing in their defense. The museum showcases photos, artwork, images, and video, as well as buffalo items you can touch. And that all-important Buffalo Field Campaign merchandise. Please come visit us at 128 Firehole Number 2 in West Yellowstone or call for more information at 406-646-6445. The Buffalo Field Campaign's Free Buffalo Museum is open daily from noon until 8 p.m. When volunteers are wanted, if you want to volunteer to stand in the new Buffalo, Free Buffalo, that's really what they want. We have immediate openings for summer volunteers who can help us conduct outreach and education, representing the Buffalo Field Campaign and the Buffalo at the Yellowstone Visitors to our Free Buffalo Museum in West Yellowstone. If you're interested, passionate, and hardworking, please contact us. And the Buffalo Field Campaign, you can send them stuff at P.O. Box 957 in West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. The phone number again is 406-646-0070. And the webpage for all this information and more, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And no more cuts in the White Castle timber sale up in Oregon. Tree sitters, blockades, and their support crew have found a new home near the headwaters of Myrtle Creek on the ONC land in the White Castle timber sale. They are defending 77 acres of native, never-before-logged forest from variable retention harvest, also known as clear-cutting. As Doug Hyken of Oregon Wild describes, the White Castle project is a cynical attempt to pass off clear-cutting century-old trees as restoration. In reality, the true focus of this project is providing cheap timber to old-growth-dependent logging mills at taxpayer expense. The White Castle timber sale contains lush native and old-growth trees, punctuated by flowering rhododendrons, trilliums, and wild iris among salal and Oregon grape. It is considered habitat for 5 pairs of endangered spotted owls, 3 fens, and rare forest wetlands. A few days ago, after being discovered by a survey crew, our friends were visited by various levels of law enforcement, including the Douglas County Sheriff and the Myrtle Creek Police. So far, there have been no arrests, no extractions, and no loss of conviction. We are here to stay. And if you want more information, go to CascadiaRising.org. And Chad has arrested a suspected member of an elephant slaughter gang in this reporting by Majastra Nako, with writing by Joe Bavier, editing by David Goodman of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Authorities in Chad have arrested a suspected member of a poaching gang accused of slaughtering nearly 200 elephants and killing 5 Cameroonian park rangers, an environment minister said on Tuesday. Rising demand for ivory among Asians' newly affluent classes has led to a rise in poaching by well-armed, highly organized gangs that take advantage of Central Africa's security void to prey on the region's forest elephants. Idris Hassan was transporting 124 elephant tusks when he was arrested in the village of Gore, near the border with neighboring Central African Republic. Idris Hassan has operated since 2011 in the Salamat and Gera regions and near the borders between Chad, Cameroon, and Central African Republic, Environment Minister Mahamat Issa Halakimi said in a statement published on Tuesday. The ministry accuses Hassan of belonging to a gang responsible for killing 149 elephants in the August of 2012 and in January of this year. The group is also accused of poaching 40 elephants and killing 5 rangers in neighboring Cameroon. The government equipped its park wardens with new vehicles and weapons after the January killings in Chad, and Halakimi said it now planned to open an observation center and a telephone hotline for reporting poaching. In a report last month, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said that elephant poaching was a growing security concern, especially in Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, and Gabon. He told the UN Security Council that poachers were using powerful weapons, some of which may be left over from the civil war in Libya, and ivory sales were a potential source of funding for groups including Joseph Kony's Lord's Resistance Army. The United States Environment Program said this year that more African elephants are being illegally slaughtered for their ivory than are being born each year. And California is being sued over its Big Basin State Park plan and the threats to marbled murrelets in this story by Jason Hoppen of the Scotts Valley Sentinel. An environmental group sued the state Wednesday over a plan to give Big Basin State Park a makeover, saying the agency should do more to protect an endangered seabird that nests high in the limbs of old-growth redwoods. The San Francisco-based Center for Biological Diversity filed the suit in Santa Cruz County, alleging state parks is required by state law to add additional protections for the marbled murrelet, with about half the bird's known nests located within a kilometer of Big Basin's historic park headquarters. The murrelet is declining. It's running out of time, said Shea Wolf, a biologist with the Center for Biological Diversity. This plan should have been a turning point and instead only offers vague promises. State Park strongly defended itself, releasing a lengthy statement outlining efforts to protect the bird. Those included removing once-planned cabins from habitat areas and including language about removing facilities if scientifically justified. The agency said it has not failed to protect the marbled murrelet, but now has written clear and enforceable guidelines in place for immediate and future actions to preserve the old-growth forest and help with murrelet management and recovery. Approved unanimously last month by the state's Parks and Recreation Commission, the Big Basin General Plan envisions numerous changes for California's first state park. It calls for development in several underused areas and generally tried to spread visitors throughout the park, moving the main point of entry to Saddle Mountain and developing Little Basin as a primary destination. State's parks did not rule out future changes, immediately ceasing all visitor activities within the old growth area and relocating all facilities within that area is not physically or fiscally possible, the agency said, but with this general plan, that action remains an alternative for future consideration. There are about 450 marbled murrelets left in the Santa Cruz Mountains, clustered in Big Basin. But drawn by humans who leave behind food and garbage, raven, crows, and blue jays have attacked murrelet eggs and are responsible for at least a 44% and up to a 70% of all nest failures in murrelets, according to one study. Several groups protested the park plan, the first in Big Basin's 111-year history. The Audubon Society and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service both said that more should be done to protect the endangered bird. "We support the components of the lawsuit. They're well justified," said Anna Weinstein, seabird and marine program manager at Audubon, California, which, however, did not join the suit. "People care about this bird, and state parks chose to ignore scientific consensus in addition to the voice of the people. State Parks has a program to try and control ravens, crows, and blue jays, and said it would continue to study the situation." Wolf said the agency could do more, including moving a campground and a food store out of the historic headquarters. The suit cites the California Environmental Quality Act and the California Endangered Species Act. "We want them to do what was required by law, which was to mitigate measures for the marbled murrelet," Wolf said. And here's the forestry update for June 2013, prepared by Jody Frediani, environmental and forestry consultant to the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club. On June 25th, the Senate Natural Resources Committee is set to vote on AB 904, the Working Forest Management Plans. AB 904, the bill that would increase the amount of acreage ownerships available for forever timber harvest plans, think NTMPs but way bigger, will be voted on by the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee on June 25th. This bill is being opposed by the Center for Biological Diversity, Sierra Club California, Committee for Green Foothills, Central Coast Forest Watch, Sierra Club Ventana Chapter, EPIC, and Ebbets Pass Forest Watch. The bill espouses to fix problems with the NTMP program, that's Non-Industrial Timber Management Program, but does so only poorly in some cases and not at all in others. In addition to creating working forest management plans of up to 15,000 acres per ownership, it also allows for the continuance of NTMPs without any improvement over the current program and creates another vehicle for the modified working forest management plan for timberland owners with less than 160 acres in ownership. The Working Forest Management Plan and the Modified Working Forest Management Plan will provide additional regulatory relief for the timberland owners, but will limit public input and county appeal to a one-time opportunity when the plan is initially reviewed. Timber interests will get special treatment over neighbors and the general public. And here's a couple of new timber harvest plans that have been filed. Timber Harvest Plan 1-13-27 SCR in the Soquel Demonstration State Forest was filed on June 8th. It consists of 240 acres adjacent to Amaya Creek and the East Branch of Soquel Creek. Timber Harvest Plan 1-13-45 SCR, the HHTHP, has not yet been filed. Hendricks and Hogan is the property owner. It consists of 11 parcels and 166 acres on Marshall Creek, Marshall Creek is 300 feet downstream at the East Timber Harvest Plan boundary. Fall Creek is adjacent to the Timber Harvest Plan, and the plan is adjacent to Fall Creek State Park. Both of the creeks are tributaries to the San Lorenzo River. The plan is located 1.1 miles west of the town of Ben Lomond. The registered professional forester is Harlan Tranmer. And here's something about remembering Olive Mayer. "She was a force of nature, a force for nature, and a force for all things good and just. She was ahead of her time in everything she did, and the list of challenges she dared to face is long and daunting." And that was a remembrance by Anna Eshoo. And here's a little eulogy by Dean Rimmerman. When we listen to our elders, even when their later years include confusion, we can be led to a truth greater than words. In this case, it's an elder who lived a life speaking out for the underdog, taking up the cause of so many issues, especially forest protection. Olive Mayer bravely spoke the harsh truth of so much heartbreak from beloved forests being destroyed. She also persevered to protect those forests no matter how much of it was already lost. When I last talked to Olive Mayer on the phone, it was in the fall of 2008, and she was so happy to hear that I had just finished a grad school public administration program with a focus on international forest governance. "Good for you," she said again and again in her husky, burly, yet still sweet-sounding womanly voice. Ollie was a woman who graduated with an engineering degree before World War II. When she applied for engineering jobs and couldn't get hired because she was a woman, she set up her own workshop, machine shop. She also loved to hike to see the land, so did her husband. A long hike in the wild Rocky Mountain area of Estes Park was their first date. Of all the forests Ollie loved, I think it was the ancient redwood forest of Pescadero Creek on the San Francisco Peninsula that meant the most to her. Tears would fill her eyes when she talked of how much the logging of that forest destroyed her. She was adamant that she'd never forget beautiful spring days and the sweet smells of an ocean rhododendron blooms under a primeval canopy of redwood trees. And now, in this time of grieving her loss, we can celebrate Olive's saving of so much. She is a woman worthy of so many accolades. In that joy, it's easy to forget that her heart was deeply and forever wounded when loggers cut down the ancient forest landscapes of Pescadero Creek. And here's an update on 39M, the downtown puma that was spotted three or four times in the last few weeks. Here's an update on Lion 39M, the young male that turned up in downtown Santa Cruz last month. In short, he appears to be doing well, as interpreted from GPS locations and an examination of the few sites where he's killed and eaten prey. GPS locations indicate that 39M is remaining near the area where he was released. We had expected he would leave the area, but he has instead expanded his range to include the surrounding slopes and countryside. Young male lions travel long distances from the area where they are raised in search of a vacant territory. We don't know whether 39M will eventually leave the release area in search of a permanent territory, or if he will adopt that area as his permanent home. And the majesty and mystery of California redwoods. Emily Burns of Save the Redwoods League, Fred Keeley of Semper Virens Fund, and Jerry Rohde, redwood historian and author of Humboldt Redwood State Park, the complete guide on KQED Forum. "The redwoods, once seen, leave a mark or create a vision that stays with you always," wrote John Steinbeck. "Today, 96% of the original old-growth coast redwoods have been logged, but the magic of the big tree lives on in Northern California's parks and preserves. We discuss the history of the redwoods, current preservation efforts, and the best places to experience them. We'll also examine the latest research on redwoods, new studies on the potential impacts of climate change." And we want to thank Jody Frediani, forestry consultant for the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club, for her monthly forest updates, and we always learn so much. Turning to biological diversity news, California fisheries are now among the deadliest for endangered whales. A new federal report finds that California's drift net gillnet fishery is among the nation's deadliest for marine mammals. At least three endangered sperm whales are killed every year by the fishery, more than twice the number federal scientists say the whale's population can withstand. On an average year in the California fishery, which uses mile-long nets set adrift in the ocean, catches and discards more than 100 protected whales, dolphins, seals, and sea lions, as well as thousands of sharks and non-target fish. Nearly all these creatures are dead or dying when ditched. Last fall, the Center for Biological Diversity and our allies filed a notice of intent to sue the federal government over its authorization of California's gillnet fishery. "There's no reason for the endangered sperm whales to die in California gillnets. It just shouldn't happen," said the center's Catherine Kilduff. "These incredible whales are already struggling against climate change, loud noises from military exercises, and other threats. At the very least, we should try to ensure that they don't get snared in indiscriminate fishing nets. And two Washington plants have prevailed in getting protection. A pair of eccentrically named pretty plants won a beautiful victory in Washington State recently. Following the center's historic 757 agreement, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service protected the Umtenum Desert Buckwheat and Wild Bluffs Bladder Pod under the Endangered Species Act, along with 3,200 acres of essential habitat. The Umtenum Desert Buckwheat is a woody plant that can live 150 years. Unfortunately, it's limited to a single outcrop on the edge of the Umtenum Ridge in Benton County, Washington. The White Bluffs Bladder Pod, a showy yellow-flowered perennial, is limited to the White Bluffs area of Washington's Hanford Reach. Both plants are threatened by fire, invasive species, off-road vehicles, and more. They were just discovered in 1995. It's time to end the Navy's toxic ocean dumping. Please take action. For decades, the U.S. Navy has been using our oceans as a staging ground for target practice. Its war games typically involve shooting and sinking of old ships, but when those ships are blown apart, they release all sorts of toxic chemicals, including cancer-causing PCBs that hurt fish, whales, dolphins, and other marine wildlife. We have a chance to stop it. The EPA is reviewing the Navy's program known as SYNC-X and is deciding whether to continue exempting it from laws that protect marine life from dangerous substances. And sanctions are sought to stop sea turtle killing in Mexican fisheries. Every year, Mexican fisheries off southern Baja California accidentally catch and kill more than 2,000 endangered loggerhead turtles. Just last summer, sea turtle strandings reached a record high when 483 loggerhead sea turtles were found dead along a 25-mile stretch of coast, and that's 600% more than average. Baja California Sur has the highest concentration of sea turtle strandings in the world and is considered a bycatch hotspot because so many Mexican fisheries overlap key sea turtle feeding grounds. In response to the ongoing mass deaths, the center and its partners petitioned for trade sanctions against Mexico, launching a legal process we hope will ban some Mexican fish imports until the country stops its turtle massacre. Mexico needs common-sense measures to prevent its fishermen from entangling, hooking, and killing thousands of loggerhead turtles. The Senate Attorney Sarah Ulliman says, "These amazing animals have been around since the dinosaurs, but if we don't do everything we can to help them, they'll wink out overnight." A new study finds that white nose fungus could wipe out Indiana bats. A scientific study released recently brought ominous news. Endangered Indiana bats will virtually disappear within about 10 years from large portions of their range because of white nose syndrome, the bat epidemic that has killed nearly 7 million animals since it appeared in 2006 and is rapidly spreading west and south. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, more than 90% of the total Indiana bat population, ranging from New England to the Ozarks, with a Midwestern stronghold, will be exposed to the disease within the next two decades. "These findings paint a stark picture of a species headed directly for the abyss," said Molly Madison, the center's bat specialist. "We need to be moving aggressively towards stemming the spread of this deadly disease." The Center for Biological Diversity petitioned in 2010 to protect three bat species under the Endangered Species Act and have been working for years to urge federal support for combating white nose syndrome. Beyond their lives' intrinsic value, bats give U.S. farmers about a $22 billion boost in pest control services every year. And a California fracking bill has cleared its first hurdle. Big news in our fight against fracking in California. The State Assembly's Natural Resources Committee passed three bills that would place a moratorium on fracking while studies are conducted on how the controversial practice affects California's environment and public health. Included in the vote was AB 1301, sponsored by the Center for Biological Diversity and Partners and supported by more than 130 other public interest organizations. Oil and gas wells have been fracked in at least 9 California counties since 1945 without fracking-specific regulation or even monitoring by state oil and gas officials. Fracking uses huge volumes of water mixed with sand and sometimes toxic chemicals, including known carcinogens, to blast apart rock formations and release previously inaccessible fossil fuels. It can release methane, which worsens the climate crisis and threaten wildlife, clean air, and clean water. The three new bills now go to the Assembly Appropriations Committee. And a lawsuit has been launched against a plan to log 150,000 California acres. Center for Biological Diversity and our allies have taken the first step in a legal challenge in a plan that would allow a private company to log 150,000 acres in Northern California, including old-growth habitat essential for salmon, spotted owls, and other wildlife. Included in the plan is approval to harm or kill more than 80 federally protected northern spotted owls. Our challenge targets a habitat conservation plan approved by federal wildlife agencies that allows Fruit Growers Supply Company to log in Siskiyou County, California for years in exchange for vague and uncertain promises to protect wildlife habitat in the future. We filed our notice of intent to sue the agencies recently. These irreplaceable forests and the wildlife they harbor ought to be preserved, not sold off for unenforceable promises of protection that may or may not ever happen, said Tim Ream, the center's attorney. And a cruel trap has killed the sister of Wandering Wolf OR7. We just learned that the sister of Oregon's renowned canine adventurer OR7, the first wild gray wolf to set foot in California in nearly 90 years, has been killed. OR5, a 3-year-old member of Oregon's Imnaha pack, died in a painful foothold trap in Idaho on March 30th, the next to last day of Idaho's trapping season. The Imnaha pack was quickly diminishing. In addition to the loss of OR5, the pack's OR9 wolf was shot last year by an Idaho man under an expired hunting license, and OR16 of the Wenaha pack was shot earlier this year while trotting along an Idaho ridge top. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update for this week. The Earth First Update is produced every week on Thursday night at 9 o'clock in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's also rebroadcast on Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also hear the Earth First Update every Monday evening at 9:30. In Moscow, Idaho, on Radio Free Moscow, KRFP. You can also listen or download this Earth First Update from the following website, radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. Just search for Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and is a production of Earth First Radio. We want to thank you for listening. We'd also like to encourage you to go out and do something for the environment, because if you don't, who will? Thank you for listening. Do tune in next week.